And then the rest of the time will be for all of us. Before we ask a question, everyone will breathe in and out 3 times with the sound of the bell, so that there is a peace and calm in the hall. And those of you who have a question are invited to come up here and sit around Thay. And we'll take turn to sit on that chair so that everyone can see us. And we know that a good question can benefit many people. That is why we had to ask that question, the question of our heart. A question that has to do with our happiness, suffering, practice. There are a few questions already written down here. And from time to time, Brother Fabian will read one of them. If you are a little bit shy and do not want to come up here, you may like to write it down, your question, and have someone bring it here. So those of us who have questions are invited to come and sit close to Thay. You might like to ask your question in French or German, English, and so on. Teenagers are encouraged to come, young adults. This is a happy moment. So please continue to come up and sit with us. It's very beautiful from here. You can see the whole Sangha. Right? Very beautiful Sangha. So let us sit comfortably and enjoy breathing with the sound of the bell. The master, the bell master today is Brother Pháp Tử Dhammaputra, who has come from Indonesia. This is the first question.
Dear Thay, there is laziness, dear Sangha. If I say the truth and the other person knows it's the truth, why does he sometimes lie?
Why? First of all, we have to learn how to say the truth in such a way that it will not hurt the other person. We have to learn loving speech so that when we tell the truth, it will not hurt him or her, and that person will be able to accept that is the truth. In order to do that, you have to train yourself. It's good to have the truth, but you have to show the truth in such a way that make it easier for people to see and to accept. And that can already be very helpful. So don't just say, I'm just telling the truth. That's not enough. Telling the truth is not enough. You should tell the truth in such a way that the other person can accept it and transform. And if someone lies because she is afraid to be looked down, to be looked upon, So when someone lies, someone does not want to tell the truth, that person has a lot of fear. So we should not press too much. But we should tell her that it's good, very good to accept the truth and to say it aloud. And it can be healing if we accept the truth. So this is about relationship. We should learn to be skillful, to be compassionate, even if we know that the truth is the most important thing. And we should learn how to tell the truth in such a way that can help people understand, accept. And this is the practice of the fourth mindfulness training. There are five mindfulness trainings. And the fourth is about how to listen and how to talk. And if you practice the fourth mindfulness training, deep listening, loving speech, you can increase happiness in your family, in your society, 10 times, 100 times.
Dear Thay, dear is laziness, dear Sangha. dear Thai, dear Sangha, why does anger normally come with sadness?
Are you sure? I think that anger is a more offensive kind of energy. And sadness is a little bit the opposite. When you are sad, you are low. Maybe anger comes first, and anger makes you say something or do something. You want to do something or to say something in order to express your anger, because you believe that shouting or hitting may bring you a relief. You suffer less when you say something very strong. You do something strong in order to make the other person suffer, and you will suffer less. Many of us think like that. When you suffer, we want to punish the other person who has made us suffer. And we try to say something very mean, very cruel, to make her suffer. Or we try to do something cruel, punching, to make him suffer. So that is the energy of anger, a little bit offensive. And after you have, after the damage has been done, you regret, and sadness come. I'm sorry I have said that. I am sorry I have done that. So maybe sadness come a little bit after. But if during the time you get angry, if you know how to breathe in and smile to your anger, breathing in, I know you are there, my little anger. Good morning. But after that, I know you. I have practiced mindful breathing, mindful walking. I have enough calm. You cannot push me to do that. You cannot push me to say that. And if we talk to our anger like that, our anger cannot do anything to us. Hello, my little anger. You are a long-time friend. I know you. You have done a lot of damage, but now I have learned how to take care of you. So let us breathe together, work together, and make peace. And if you can, take care of your anger like that, you cannot say it, you cannot do it. You will not say the thing or do the thing that will bring your regret later. And if you can do that, sadness will not come. Instead, something very different will come. That is the joy of having been successful in practicing how to take care of your anger. We have to take care of our anger skillfully. We should not consider our anger like an enemy. We should not try to hit our anger or suppress our anger, but we should treat our anger nicely. We say hello to it, like to our younger brother or sister. So if you know how to hold your anger mindfully, tenderly, like when you are holding your little sister, and then your anger will suffer less. And that's the way we do it here. We learn to take care of our anger here. Every time anger is coming up, we go back to our breathing, our walking, and generate the energy of mindfulness and embrace our anger very tenderly, like a mother embracing her baby. This is a wonderful practice recommended by the Buddha. And I think parents should teach their children to do so. And school teachers should teach their students to do so. And we are going to have a meeting of school teachers today. And we will talk about that. Thank you for asking the question. The children can stand up and bow to the Sangha and go out and continue the practice. Have a good day. Discuss more about how to take care of your anger. When you hear the bell for walking meditation, please join us.
dear Sangha, why do we so easily mix up sexual desire and love?
In the third mindfulness training, it is said that sexual desire is not love. But there must be some kind of relationship between the two. That is why people get mixed up. I think to love is... the willingness to offer happiness and to help reduce suffering. If you talk about true love, and then you have to think of that. Love can bring happiness and can reduce suffering. The sexual act can bring happiness, can reduce suffering, but can also bring a lot of suffering and destroy happiness. Depends on how you do it. And with mindfulness, concentration, and insight, the coming together of the lovers become something very sacred, very beautiful, very spiritual. But without that, it can bring about anger, hate, despair, and so on. So the difference lies in the content of love. So in our time, we speak of empty sex. Empty sex means there is no love at all. And why people practice empty sex? Partly because they are lonely. People of our time are very lonely. Even if they have a lot of means for communication, they have telephone, they have the internet, they have every means of communication. But people of our time are very lonely. There is a emptiness, there is a vacuum inside. And you suffer because of that loneliness. We feel cut off. We feel no one understands us. No one loves us. And there is an illusion that the coming together of two bodies can reduce that kind of loneliness. You believe that having sexual relationship with someone, you can communicate and you can reduce your loneliness. But the fact is that after the sexual act, you feel that you are more lonely. And you have damage. You have great damage into your body and his, her body and mine. So that act of sexuality is rather than rather destructive than constructive. And in the teaching of the Buddha, we learn that true love is made of maitri, karuna, mudita, and upeksha. Maitri means the capacity to bring happiness. Maitri is loving kindness, to bring happiness, offer happiness to you and to the other person. An act or a word that can bring true happiness to you and to him, to her. That is in the direction of Maitri. Karuna means compassion. Something you do, you say, that can alleviate the suffering, that can transform the suffering in you and in that person, there is karuna. It is very healing. The true love is very healing. You understand the suffering in him or in her or in you. And you do something or another to transform the suffering. And that is the practice of karuna. And mudita is joy. The kind of joy that is not egoistic. The kind of joy that can only nourish and does not destroy. And that joy goes perfectly with compassion and loving kindness. And lastly, upeksha means non-discrimination. In true love, they know you and I. There is no more you and I. We are one. Your suffering is mine, and my suffering, my happiness is yours. So that's non-discrimination. So the Buddha's teaching on love is very clear. And if when we look at the relationship, and if we don't see these four elements, we know that it's not true love. It's only sexual desire. And it's not true love. So parents have to tell the children what is true love. And parents can live with each other in such a way that the children can see true love in their parents. And naturally, they will learn to do that. So parents are the first teachers of love. The way parents taking care of each other, that is the lesson in the University of Love. And the children, 24 hours, learn from that kind of lesson. And then teacher in school also can help, because teachers can love the students. And I think in applied ethics, if we are to teach applied ethics in school, we have to teach about true love. It's so important. And parents and teachers have to practice true love in order to be qualified to teach. And our Buddhist Institute are ready to train parents and school teachers on applied ethics so that they can transmit their wisdom, their experience to the to the people, to the students attending school. So we should organize a meeting. Maybe the young people and discuss about this matter. What is true love? Why empty sex destroys so much? And find a way out and help the people in the wake up movement to promote that kind of social sentiment, social emotion that is very important in our daily life.
Many of us, I have hurt someone I love very much, and through my words and my actions, I want to find a way to reconcile with that person because I do love them very much. How can I go about doing that?
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, I understood the question to be that our friend said that she had hurt somebody through her actions and words, and she would like to know how to reconcile with that person because she loves them very much.
There are many ways to do that. One of the ways is to pick up one friend, someone that we can trust, you can trust, and the other person can trust, and talk to her, talk to him about that. Tell that person the truth, that we love the other person, that we have made some mistake, have done some unskillful things, and we regret, we cherish very much our relationship, and we don't want to repeat that kind of unskillfulness again. It's not difficult to find such a person who can serve as a bridge between you and him or her. But what is more important is that you are determined to do so, that you are really willing to reconcile, to rebuild relationship, that you see that relationship is very precious to you and to him, to her. So before asking that person to come and open your heart to him or her, and then you ask yourself. And when you know that that's what you really want, and then you can ask him or her to come, and you tell him or her what is your heart. That person who is trusted by the other person will serve as your messenger. And that is one of the ways to do it. Personally, I do that from time to time. Even if my relationship with that person is still good, is very good, there are things that I don't want to tell him directly or to tell her directly, because the effect will be more important if someone who is on the same wavelength to tell it to him or to her. From time to time, I ask one of my students to help another student of mine. Even if I can help directly, what I ask another student, disciple, to come and help. So you don't have to do it directly all the time. You can do it via another person. Sometimes it works better, even better. Because between teacher and students, maybe there is a generation gap. You try your best to fill up that kind of generation gap, but sometimes you know that if they are of the same age, they talk to each other more easily. So Thầy also Thầy knows that that kind of effect. That is why he has been using that kind of practice, asking a disciple to help another disciple. So in your case, asking a friend to help a friend and help you. The other way is to sit down and write a letter. Everything in your heart, you write it down. And be sure to practice love and speech. I write a letter that the other person can read, can accept every word you write. No blaming, no accusing. Just watering the flowers and show him, show her that how much you appreciate his or her presence. As a sangha.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, dear friends, I have been here for a month, and I think this is Eden for practitioners. 2 days ago, I was informed from Australia that my dear auntie, who is more than a mother to me, had passed away 2 weeks ago. The decision was not to inform me so that I don't go back. I'm deeply saddened, and my initial response was to go back to help with the collective energy to chant the Sitigawa Sutra for her for 49 days. That is the practice of the Pure Land tradition. But after going for a walking meditation and much breathing, I've decided to come in today and request if the community could help me with the collective energy, support her, to give her the merits to be reborn into a conducive family, to continue her practice. All I ask is one moment of our collective energy.
When we practice mindful breathing, we feel that she is there, here and today. She's sitting with us because her nature is non-local. She's everywhere at the same time. So she has heard what you have said. And she is in you and in us. And let us join our palms and recite the name of Avalokiteshvara to her 3 times.
Namo Avalokiteshvara.
So you may like to breathe in such a way and walk in such a way that she could be alive with you with every breath and every step. She has not died. She continues with your practice. Let us take one question from the floor.
Dear Thai, dear Sangha, there are two similar questions about practicing the five mindfulness trainings in the workplace. The kind, compassionate, and soft approach you are advocating is seen as weakness in the business and corporate world, where tough, competitive decisions are required to survive. How can I keep my job, which is my family's livelihood, in the corporate world and still follow the teachings? And this is about how should we see our competitors at the working place? They will do things to jeopardize our positions at work. What should we do in reaction?
Think about, this is about the problem of happiness. It's not the problem of survival. You talk about the survival of your corporation, of your organization. But what you want is more than survival. What you want is happiness. In order to survive, you are ready to do everything, including to destroy your environment, to destroy your relationship with the world, with nature. That is not for our happiness. So you have to go down to the ground, to the basic question. What do you want? You want to survive or you want to be happy? And if you think that happiness is survival, that would be a tragedy. You cannot be happy. When you see that in order to survive, you have to destroy yourself, destroy your family, destroy your environment. So you have to deal with the roots of the problem. It has to do with our way of life. It has to do with our with the peace in our heart. There are those of us who do not have a lot of money. who do not have a high position in society. And yet, we do not suffer. We can smile. Several times a day. We have time to take care of ourselves and to take care of our beloved one. Even if we don't have a beautiful car, a beautiful house, and the average salary. We have to abandon the idea that happiness is not possible when you have not reached that level of comfort, material comfort. That those who are on that level of material comfort, there are many of them who are above that level, but they are not happy. They survive, yes, but they are not happy. And we don't want to be like that. Is it possible to organize so that you can live more simply and more happily? And the answer is yes. We have to find a way out. We have to reorganize our society. We know that many corporations try to do humanitarian work. They make profits and they suffer inside. They say that, well, they have exploited the environment. They have caused damage to the environment. They have helped create more gap between the rich and the poor. So they feel guilty, so they devote a portion of their income to do humanitarian work so that they will suffer less. But that is a tragedy. You do two things that do not go together. If in order to keep the comfort, you have to stay on in the system, you are losing yourself, you are losing your happiness, your peace, your joy, because you just want to survive, to be kept in the same level of comfort. That's not happiness. And we need a courageous act in order to become free from the system. And that cannot come unless you have some kind of enlightenment, some kind of awakening. You don't want to do it anymore. In fact, there are businessmen, chief of corporation, who would like to find another way. And it is possible to apply the 5 mindfulness trainings into building the corporation. And it is my conviction that if a corporation is built upon the 5 mindfulness means, it will be very attractive. People are ready to come and to invest into that. Invest their life into it, because that will provide us with the hope for a better future. In a corporation where the five mindfulness trainings are practiced, there is a good relationship. There is a mutual understanding and compassion. People are happy. And not only they can help each other to live, but to help many other people. Because the five trainings is a beautiful path recommended by the Buddha. So as the head of a corporation, you are invited to meditate, to practice looking deeply, and to see that success is possible in the area of business if you are motivated by the desire to reduce suffering, to create happiness by the practice of five mindfulness trainings. Again, we need to sit down and look together as how to do it. It is possible to create a kind of corporation where people can live as brothers and sisters, where people can communicate, where people have time to take care of each other, where people know how to speak and to listen. And if you are the chief of such a corporation, you are doing like Anatta Pinika, a real bodhisattva in the realm of business. It will bring a lot of happiness. There are people who are capable of doing so.
Dear Thai, dear brothers and sisters, during this week, I have learned that every moment of conscious being without thinking is a moment of enlightenment. There is not even any more a question of enlightenment. I see that this world is full of suffering, and I try my best to transform this suffering into love. Still, there is one question. Why does anyone choose or want to be born or reborn in a world full of suffering?
How do you know that this is suffering? How do you know that something is suffering? Because you compare it to something else, which is not suffering. If there is only suffering in the world, you cannot know that it is suffering. You know it is suffering because there is something else that is happiness. It's like darkness and light. If it is darkness all the time, you don't call it darkness because you don't have the light in order to compare, in order to know that it is darkness. So suffering is there because something else is always is also there, that is happiness. Without happiness, you cannot identify suffering. And without suffering, you cannot identify happiness. It's like the above and the below. If there is no above, there is no below. Okay? That is the Buddhist non-dualistic way of looking. So when you say there is suffering, you say at the same time, there is happiness. And how can you identify happiness? Against the background of suffering, you see there are many wonders of life. There are many beautiful things in us and around us. It is possible to have a beautiful Sangha sitting with us. It is possible to have a beautiful garden. It is possible to have lotus flowers growing. It is possible to have a gathering of brothers and sisters in order to breathe mindfully and peacefully. All these things are positive. They belong to the realm of happiness. And any one of us would have had a chance to see that there are wonders of life that are available in every moment. So suffering is there, but something else is there also, that is happiness. And you call it the kingdom of God, the pure land of the Buddha. So because there is suffering, that is why you want to be reborn. So that you can help show the people that not only there is suffering, there is something else. And it is possible to get in touch with that something else. And with the mud, we can always, if we know how, to grow lotus flowers. So if someone makes the vow to be born again, that is he wants or she wants to continue her bodhisattva career, show people how to make use of the mud in order to grow lotus flower. Show the people how to make use of the garbage in order to nourish flowers. Show the people how to use suffering as a background in order to demonstrate happiness is possible. Okay. Dear Sangha, next year will be the anniversary, the 30th anniversary of Plum Village. We should organize something to celebrate. Please come next year and celebrate together, the 30th anniversary of Plum Village. I still remember the first summer opening. It was only 50 people for the whole summer.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Thay. I have taken 1 million breathing before coming here, but this is not enough. my English is very horrible, and I try use this is strange language for me. I have two ajwar. One question. One is inside, one is outside, but there is one bridge connected. I can put every. I try. I work a lot for many years with meditation, looking in myself, in my emotional, for understanding my story, no, in the past. And this working now put me in one corner. It's a very strange situation. Because in the night, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, wake up, and my brain is very different. My thinking is very clear. My feeling is this. Some organ, one organ in my body, take more energy and have more authority and produce this type of thinking. And the feeling is the emotion, the body, the thinking is very near, no? And it's not one thing, it's very near. And looking these things, I have personality. And this personality is separate. And there is these things is out the every object. And these personalities don't know living. Why cannot connect it with the other things? Why is really separate? And the finality, the final thing is I don't know living. And the solution is I dead, no? If my personality is dead, I can live. But if think this, big fear. Why? My personality don't know what to do for that. It's not possible. Why? My personality, every action is broken, fragmentation. Is not the death is not fragmentation. I have this feeling. This is my point. What to do for go one jump in avanti? One Italian, help me. The second is very direct to you. Is what is your position, esoteric position? You are realized same a Buddha.
Can you repeat?
It's not possible.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, I'm not completely sure that I understood the question. I think it was something to do with feeling that your personality is somehow separate from the world, from the environment, and that there's a disconnection between your intention and action, connecting with your environment.
Yes, but this is for me is very important. Why? If I want to surrender really surrender for another energy, because I think my possibility for death need one energy more big to me. You understand? If my personality want death, need one more big energy. It's not possible with my energy only do this. Eh sì. Mi traduci?
Dalla prima.
Dear Tai, would you like to hear the question again? The first question?
Allora, in italiano è facile. Allora, sono nel punto in cui mi sveglio la notte e ho questo pensiero molto chiaro.
Dear Tai, dear Sangha, in this moment of my life, when I wake up at night, suddenly, I have this very clear thought.
Di essere la personalità e che questa personalità è separata da tutto il resto.
I am being a personality, a certain personality, but this personality is being separated, is living separated from its surroundings.
E quindi concludo di non saper vivere perché non posso col.
My conclusion is then that I'm not able to live my life because I have no connection with my surroundings.
E allora la mia risposta è devo morire come personalità.
Then my answer is to myself, I feel I have to die as a personality.
Ma questo provoca immediatamente una paura enorme perché io non so morire, non posso morire.
But this provokes a huge fear in me because I don't know how to die.
And I think I need one energy more big to me.
I feel I need a greater energy than me to do this, to be able to do this.
This
would be the first question.
La seconda domanda è collegata.
The second question has to do with the first one.
Perché io per arrendermi
to be able to surrender
a un maestro,
to my teacher,
devo sapere se è un maestro.
I have to know if he is a teacher, whether he is a teacher for me.
Perché in passato ho avuto esperienza, ho lavorato con Krishnamurti.
In the past I worked with Krishnamurti.
A distanza avevamo un grossissimo collegamento energetico.
On a distance, we had a great connection on an energetic level.
E ho sperimentato cosa vuol dire andare fuori dalla personalità.
I could experience how it feels like to go outside your own personality, beyond your own personality.
Questo è stato un lavoro istintivo.
It was an instinctive work. This was the question to die.
Is something separate from the world, and in order to be in connection with the divine, he needs to kill his personality. His personality. His personality is to die, but he doesn't feel capable. Dear Tai, dear Sangha, so I think I understood that the question is that our friend feels that sometimes in the middle of the night when he wakes up, he has the experience that he has a kind of thinking which is extremely clear. But that this personality which seems to exist at that time is completely cut off from the environment, from the surroundings. And that in order to be in connection with his environment, with his actions, that personality somehow needs to die. But that he's not able to allow that personality to die because he needs some external energy, a bigger energy to help him somehow. And it's related to the second question in the sense that he feels the need for a teacher to help him with that. But he's not sure if Tai is really his teacher. Because I think I understood that he said only a Buddha would be qualified to do that. So he wants to know if Tai is a real Buddha.
Question, as I understood it, was this one. Our Sangha brother would like to know what's your esoteric position, so he will understand whether you are his teacher or not.
There's a lot of discrimination in your thinking. And the Buddhist way of thinking, of acting, is non-discrimination. You believe that your teacher is someone outside of you. You and your teacher, you are two completely different entities. And your practice, your success or failure depends on the teacher outside. But in the Buddhist tradition, your teacher is inside. At least your concept, your notion about your teacher is inside of you. You might have created an image of a teacher. So what you believe to be the teacher outside, maybe just the teacher inside of you. I consider Shakyamuni to be my teacher, but I don't think of him as something outside of me. I have a deep connection with Shakyamuni because I don't see him as someone really outside, as a distinctive entity. It's like your father. If you think that your father is outside of you, it's very hard for him and for you. Your father is inside of you also in a very, very deep way. Your teacher is also like that. And you are impermanent, body and mind. Sometimes you are like this, sometimes you are different. And there are not one you, but there are many you at the same time. And many forms of you are fighting inside. And you believe that you and the environment is different. The personality that you have and the environment that you have are two different things. and you see no connection between personality and environment. That is very dualistic. In fact, the environment is you. You and the environment are one. If the environment are like that, because you are like that. So you and the environment are interconnected. So there's a lot of discrimination in your way of thinking, and your practice has not allowed that discrimination to disappear. When standing in front of the Buddha, you breathe and you say, "Dear Buddha." The one who bows, and the one who is bowed to. Are equally empty of a separate existence. You are in me and I am in you. I am aware that, of that. That is why in this bow I feel connected. If the Buddha is only the Buddha, and if you are only you, no communication is possible. Because you are empty of your separate existence, and the Buddha is separated from the Buddha does not have a separate existence. Both of you and Buddha are equally empty. That is why communication is possible, and it can be deep. And without that kind of insight, the bow does not lead to anything. No communication. That is why your relationship with your teacher, with the Buddha, with the environment is all wrong, because you think in a discriminative way. And the practice we learn here is to breathe in mindfully, to breathe out mindfully, to walk mindfully, and to be aware of is what is happening. And that practice called mere awareness, a simple recognition, mere awareness. Awareness, you know what is happening. If something happens in your body, whether that is pain or stress, lightness, you know that there is a pain in my body, there is a stress, tension in my body, there is a lightness in my body. So just recognize. And you do it with mindfulness, and that the energy of mindfulness and your body, they are not exactly the two things that are separated. You are embracing your body, and when you have a feeling of joy or of sadness or fear, you also recognize that and embrace it, so you feel connected. And what happened in the environment, you are also aware and you embrace it. So there is no disconnection. You don't have to kill yourself, to kill someone in you. That's too violent. That is very un-Buddhist. If that is something strange, you just breathe in and say, "Hello, you look strange." You look strange. But I know that you are very connected. You wear a mask. You look something strange, but I know you. We are not like that. And then you have peace. You don't have to kill anyone, anything. So meditation without someone telling you to do can cause damage. If you try too hard in the discriminative way, it will harm your body and your mind. And the method of plum village is very safe. It is based on the principle of non-violence. Non-violence vis-a-vis your body, your feelings, your perceptions. So no violence is committed. To always embrace and make peace with whatever happens in your body, in your feeling, in your perceptions. No killing, please. And then non-violence goes together with non-discrimination. If there is discrimination, there will be fear, anger, and killing. But if you don't discriminate between you and your teacher, between you and your environment, you know that everything is linked to each other. So the insight of non-discrimination bring about the attitude of non-violence. That is Buddhism. Buddhism is non-discrimination and non-violence. And the practice in plum village is based on these two principles. And it's very safe. Please reconsider and learn the true practice of plum village.
When I went to the therapist, he said to me the famous words, "Forgive yourself." Then he explained that many people are not happy because they feel guilty, not guilty with anyone, feel guilty themselves. And that's why they don't allow to good things come to his life. They don't allow to work in the job they want to. They don't allow to feel relaxed and happy. So the question is if you can tell us a bit and a specific practice to forgive oneself.
It is not because you want to forgive that you can't forgive. Sometimes you want to forgive, but you cannot forgive. So the question is how to forgive. If you want to forgive someone, you have to be able to forgive yourself first. It's like to love. If you want to love someone, you have to learn how to love yourself first. Same thing is true with forgiveness. And the insight of no self can help tremendously. The teaching of no self can help tremendously. And this is not a discussion, but a practice. When you look into your body, when you look into your feelings, your consciousness, you see that you are a continuation of your ancestors, your parents. Not only we have human ancestors, but we have also animal ancestors and vegetal ancestors and mineral ancestors. And they have not died. They are still alive in us. So we carry all our ancestors along in our daily life. And every time we breathe in and look back, we see that all our ancestors always accompany us with all their strength and weakness. So if you commit something unskillful today, that's not because you really want to do it, but sometimes it is a habit energy that has left from one of the ancestors. That ancestor was not able to transform it. That habit energy. And he or she has transmitted that to you. And today, it may happen that you act or to speak on that ground of habit energy. Then you have caused suffering to you and to the other person. And now you have a complex, you have a guilt that you have behaved in such a way that make the other suffer and you suffer. Looking deeply, you see that you are made of non-you elements, including ancestors and parents. And if you have made that kind of mistake, unskillfulness, well, your ancestors have done it with you together. You are not only the one responsible. Parents, ancestors, environment, education are all co-responsible for that act. That is the insight of no self. I have been made like this. That is why I have acted like that. And if I don't practice to change, I will continue to do like that. So there are two things. The first thing is the insight that I have been made like this. And if no one helped me, and if I don't practice, I will continue to do that. And everyone is responsible. Parents, teachers, ancestors, education, environment are co-responsible for that. That is the first insight. We are the product of environment, of ancestors. So you don't feel the guilt that you are a separate self that has done that. So it can relieve you a lot of suffering and guilt. The second insight is that if I know the practice, if I have a friend, a teacher that can support me to do that, I would do differently. Right today, this afternoon, I will react differently. And this is possible. And you train yourself to say or to do things this morning. So that in the afternoon, if that happened, if the situation presents itself, you will react differently. So there are two things that can help you to feel light, liberated. And that is, and even if you don't want to forgive yourself, you are free, you see. So this is the work of meditation, of getting insight, and not just the willingness to forgive. The willingness to love is not enough. You have to learn how to love. The will to love is not enough. The will to forgive is not enough. So the therapist should show you how to look in order to get that kind of insight. I think at least two. Good luck. Dear friends, if you know, you have an idea as how to celebrate our 30th anniversary of Plumlish, please tell the monastics, they organize. Maybe you can make a concert.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, brothers and sisters, I was born in the Middle East. That was not my choice. I live there, and that is my choice. As you know, that's part of the world that is deprived of much love and compassion. It is also a part of the world where there are now no sanghas like this one. How can I keep my practice and maintain it in absence of the energy and power of a sangha like this?
You were a bodhisattva who made the vow to be born there in order to set up a sangha there. So please go home and look around you and identify elements of your sangha. They are there among children and adults. And if you make use of your practice of loving speech and deep listening, you will get plenty of friends to come and help you build a sangha there and help create the energy of brotherhood, sisterhood that we need so much. And be aware that one person is a lot. The Buddha was just one person. So you are that person that you create a sangha and bring the practice of building brotherhood, sisterhood, and mutual understanding into the area. And it is our conviction that there are so many people waiting for you there. They are ready to join you in and make this possible. Thank you. Yes, Sangha, tomorrow we have a Dhamma talk in French in the Lower Hamlet. And this is the last question of this session, and after that we will do walking meditation together. It's very beautiful up here, the Upper Hamlet.
Cher Thai, cher Sangha, quel sens donner au décès d'un enfant juste avant sa naissance? Et comment retrouver le bonheur?
Dear Thai, dear Sangha, how can we make sense of the death of a child just before his birth? And how can we rediscover happiness?
I remember one winter, in Plum Village, very harsh winter. That day is so warm, and I saw many buds of flowers, cognassier du Japon, coming out. They said that this year we will have flowers to decorate the Buddha altar. I was so happy because our practice is to cut a few branches. When the buds are strong enough, we cut a few branches and bring it into inside of the house. And it needs about 10 days in order to bloom, for the buds to become flowers, and you have something to offer to the Buddha. So during walking meditation, I saw the buds coming out because it was warm during the winter. But three days later, it became very cold, and all the buds died. And during walking meditation, I said, no flowers for this new year to offer to the Buddha. Because the buds have died. So cold. Before my mother gave birth to myself, she miscarried my big brother. And 2 years later, I came. And when I grew up, I often asked the question as whether that brother who did not come and me, are we two different persons or we are the same? You cannot tell. maybe it's me. But when I was about to go out, I said, not the time yet, so I withdraw. And I waited another 2 years in order to come out. So maybe the child has done that. Your child has said that, well, it's not the time yet, so she withdraw in order to come out again. In fact, the Konyasi Rijapong, 10 days later, come out again because it got warm again. And that year, I had plenty of flowers to decorate the table of the Buddha. So the Buddha said when conditions are sufficient, something manifests. And if conditions are not sufficient, something would draw in order to manifest again. And yet our love is still intact. I don't have to suffer. Because the true nature of everything is the nature of no birth and no death. Only manifestation and hiding the manifestation in order to manifest again. So let us practice walking meditation together in order to recognize our beloved ones that are manifesting all around us. I am my brother. Dear brothers and sisters, when you hear the bell, please gather at the bell tower. We will start walking meditation from there.